So this really underscores what Ted was talking about, no relationships to disclose here, sort of the five environments that we're talking about, and actually expanding that today, Danny's going to talk about sort of the virtual social environment that we also has a great impact on people's health across the lifespan. So just going back through what Ted talked about, so environment number one, toxic chemicals. Environment number two, the food system and our diet over the years. You know, we have choices to make. The built environment, again, many, many choices to make along those lines. The changes that have occurred have been quite dramatic over the last 50 years, paving over quite a bit of our world, sprawl, neighborhoods that aren't safe to walk in. A lot of times in the aging organizations, when we talk about the built environment, we're talking mostly about access and lighting and things like that. We want to try and bring in all the components when we talk about the multiple overlapping environments. So even if you have access to streets and sidewalks and things like that, if the air is polluted, you know, it's not a good place to be outside exercising. Or if there's a lot of people spraying pesticides on the lawns or in their houses, there's a hazardous waste site next door, all of those components. So we need to be thinking constantly about all the environments, natural environment as well, with the whole wide range of studies showing the benefits of nature as really a public health imperative, and that when you're planning communities, you really need to be thinking about providing green spaces for people. Community gardens are beneficial in a variety of ways and so forth. This Richard Louv has focused on nature deprivation, nature deficit disorder. Kids just don't go out. You know, when I was a kid, my mother said, go outside and play I don't want to see you till 6 o'clock tonight for dinner. And that's what we did. And that doesn't happen anymore. Kids are inside and it's detrimental. There are movements for the walking school bus now. The kids don't walk to school, you know, so because they feel, many parents feel that it's not safe. So they have, in some towns, have parents that walk kids to school. You know, that we have to program that into our day. And the fifth environment that Ted talked about, psychosocial and economics. There's an environmental justice thread that runs through all of this. Crystal, I think, is going to address some of that when she speaks. So what can we do, when we're confronted with the changes that have occurred over the last 50 to 100 years, which are monumental? We've changed the environment. We're seeing some of that. That was actually really gratified to hear people this morning talking on the variety of news channels about the epic storm having to do with climate change. Somebody actually brought up the word climate change. It was amazing. And, you know, some people backed off from saying that it was caused by climate change, but several people said that it was exacerbated by climate. So this natural, what might have been a much more minor storm was exacerbated by climate change. So in the prevention world, we've got basically the sort of the two levels. We have the what people can do personally. Well, there's many levels here, personal, family, community, going back to that ecological model. That's just a different graphic for it. But the business community is also really important in this, and there are a lot of businesses that are trying to do important things. And government, state, regional, and federal governments, and local governments are really important as well. So how do we start to build in, you know, some sort of positive things into our environment so that people can get exercise and eat the right foods and everything? So these are sort of two examples here. This was the one on the right, the piano steps, was introduced in Stockholm to try and get people to walk up the steps and not take the escalator. And there was a dramatic increase in that. But do we really need to paint piano steps to get people to exercise? And then the woman on the right, I mean, I thought I was a pretty good multitasker, but boy, she's really got it all. But a colleague of ours, Jill Stein, actually does things like that. She walks the dog and talks on the phone and does the trash. She's got everything going all at once. So we've got the personal level of what we can do, staying active physically and mentally and eating healthy and nutritious food and avoiding toxicants and staying socially engaged. And, you know, there's lots of ways to accomplish that, but unfortunately, a lot of people don't have the access or availability to eat healthy and nutritious foods and avoid toxicants. There's chemical trespass. I mean, if you live in a community that's got a lot of air pollution, you can work for policy initiatives to change that, but there's the policy level and the choices that we're making as communities that really help people make these positive personal choices. So things like walkable cities, AARP's got the Complete Streets program, community gardens, farmers markets, rails to trails. These are all positive initiatives that are really helping to improve people's health. I was just talking to a woman yesterday who runs the one of the WIC programs, the Women, Infants, and Children's program, and I was asking her about, you know, the profile of the food, because for a long time it was not the healthiest food imaginable, and it's much healthier now, and it came about because a lot of people put pressure from different pressure points to make it healthier. And then I asked her about the tuna situation, because a lot of us have been concerned over the years because of the mercury in the tuna, and that was the only low-cost source of protein that they were offering. And she said they're now offering four different kinds of fish, salmon, mackerel, herring, and tuna. They're also offering tofu. So, you know, these are really positive things, and they're offering coupons for the farmers markets, both for the WIC program and also for the SNAP program, which is the current it's the food stamps program, and I can never remember what SNAP stands for, but anyway, it's the current version of the food stamps program. So those are really positive things, and they're showing, and they're measuring that people use them. So the Elder Supplemental Nutrition Program, there are coupons for elder people to use them too, and they're using them. So what we like to talk about, and a lot of what Ted talked about and what I'm talking about came about from this research report that we did, Environmental Threats to Healthy Aging. There's one copy of this, and then there's a pocket guide of synthesis of it. Are these cross-cutting policies. So what one thing can we do that will have multiple impacts? So, you know, moving towards clean energy reduces air pollution and chemical exposures, but it's also connected really to public transportation, mass transit, connecting to bike paths, sidewalks, reducing air pollution, reducing levels of obesity, increasing exercise. So, or looking at safer substitute programs, you're reducing toxic exposures, but you're also improving worker health, improving ecosystem health, et cetera. So the multiple environments that affect us also provide us with really multiple opportunities for interventions. Now, here's a couple of policy initiatives that we all can have an impact on. You know, the Farm Bill is really a health bill. Because in the Farm Bill is embedded how not only subsidies for agriculture and what kinds of agriculture is being promoted, but things like the Supplemental Food Program, the WIC program, and so forth, connected in with the sort of the recommendations on healthy eating. And right now, the Toxic Chemicals Control Act, which hasn't been reviewed since 1976, is now there's a bill in Congress that will help change how we regulate chemicals. Right now, manufacturers are not required to prove that chemicals are safe. It's up to the government, the EPA, the poor beleaguered EPA, I'm sure Kathy would be here to defend it, is forced into being able to prove that the chemicals are harmful, and that costs a lot of money and time. So as a consequence, very few chemicals have been regulated. So this is the little healthy aging pocket guide that's on the back table there that goes through some of these things in short order. But part of what we wanted to do here was get people's ideas that are in the audience, because we want to be able to talk to other audiences and policymakers about some ideas on cross-cutting solutions. We want to keep this part within sort of that half an hour. So, Peter, do you have the time?
It's
9 o'clock. Okay, so why don't we just take a few minutes now if people have some ideas about work that you've been doing. I haven't been able to get to all the posters here and to see all the great work that's being done, but I'm sure there's some ideas on cross-cutting solutions at the community level that people can help us integrate into our thoughts when we're proposing policies, you know, for organizations like AARP or the government or local level. So anybody have any ideas? Yes.
Yesterday, and I happened to have been in Portland, Oregon when this was going on. There was an initiative to work with neighborhoods.
Do you want to stand up and face everybody so people can hear and see you and hear you?
There was an initiative to, with what they have neighborhood groups in Portland, so each different neighborhood has just a committee that's been built up. And what they did was focus on some areas. These are people from Portland State University, and I can give you it's Jan Semenza, who happens to actually be in Stockholm now.
Yeah.
But he was in Portland at the time. And so they brought the community together to talk about, they did an asset assessment and a needs assessment. So they found out, you know, that there were, it's a very mixed neighborhood they were in, not the poorest, but it was, had, you know, prostitution, drug use, homelessness, et cetera, in the area. And so they found they had planners, architects, people who did landscaping, and a number of, you know, other kinds of skills. And then the idea was not only to come up with a project, but also to build a social network. And so he talked about it on three levels, and I have my notes here. I've been trying to take notes. And social bonding, so to get people in the neighborhood who would to kind of work together, and that was kind of the final outcome. But before that, it was social bridging, so people from different backgrounds could learn about each other and try to work together, who wouldn't ordinarily be in the same room together. And then there, in the middle, was social linkage, is what he called it, and that was where they took this plan that the community came up with, and it was to paint this big sunflower mosaic in the middle of an intersection. And so they took this to the city planners, and apparently they laughed in the beginning and said, you know, you want to, this is public property, what are you doing? And they said, well, we want to paint it, what's wrong with that? So they had to, you know, do a little bit of lobbying, but it worked, and they were able to do that. And they also then built trellises on the corners around it with hanging gardens. And then in another neighborhood, they built a kiosk with a living roof. So the idea, because there is so much impermeable surface there, was to create fewer heat islands, and, you know, try to kind of lower the climate change. It's a climate change session, but it also then had that effect of bringing the community together. And they looked at different